Mitzvah Shin Sadi Gimel 393 Shelo Livdos Bechor Behema Tehora, that we're not allowed to redeem the firstborn of a kosher domesticated animal. So we were just talking about Pidyon HaBen, that it's diametrically opposed, that a human firstborn, then you must redeem, and has no intrinsic Kedusha, whereas a firstborn animal has an intrinsic holiness, and one is not allowed to redeem it, and indeed, if one tries to redeem it, that does not work. Shelo nifde bechor behema tehora, mibnei shatorah tzivso livdos peter chamor, ulai yal al dateinu livdos gamken bechor behema tehora, bebehema cheres. That since the Torah said that you must, that you have the option of redeeming a firstborn donkey, right, a non-kosher animal, so you might think, okay, the Torah doesn't mention explicitly the institution of redeeming a kosher domesticated animal. So, nevertheless, since the Torah tells you that you're allowed to redeem the non-kosher animal, so the same procedures that apply in theory to a kosher animal, you can do it. Okay. Basanu hamenia bezeh shelo nifta oso la'olam. So that's why the Torah has to explicitly state the fact that you are not allowed, and indeed cannot, redeem a firstborn kosher animal. Afil avar ufadahu eino podo, even if you go ahead and you attempt to redeem it, it's not redeemed. Balzenemar ach bechor shoro bechor kesev bechor reiz lo si poda kodesh heim, they shall not be redeemed, they are holy. Be'er akosuv shalosh habehemos hatahoro shein bechiyu mitzvos bechor. So the three types of animals that have the institution of the holiness of the firstborn are the three categories of domesticated animals that are kosher: cattle, sheep, goats. Those are the three domesticated animals. Those are the animals that are kosher to be brought as a korban. Even though for eating, kimine achaya shehin shiva, einam betoras bechoros. So they're also kosher chayos, the wild animals that you're allowed to eat. They are kosher, like a giraffe or a deer or an antelope. All these types of animals are kosher, and you're allowed to eat them. But the firstborn of these types of animals are not holy. Kazavdi Veseder Bo Asevav Simentes. So it's as I said way back in Parshas Bo, we were originally mentioning the institution of Bechor. That again, the first one you give to the Kohen that indicates your intense devotion to God, and that even the first that you're willing to bring, you're imbuing it. I'm sorry, applying the rule of holiness, and you're giving it to a Kohen who's the representative of God. And not redeeming it is the part of this idea that you shouldn't have a way out of it. That you should be, your whole focus on the Bechor should be that of pure holiness, and there's no way of undoing it. Midini amitzvah gosav a Rambam habechor kimo she'ein podino, so kach ein hakohen yochol lemochor ba'odotam. So just like the original owner, the non-kohen, is not allowed to redeem it, so too the kohen is not allowed to sell the bechor after receiving it as a present. That's what he's supposed to do with the bechor. He's supposed to give it to a kohen. Then even when it does not have a mum, the kohen is not allowed to sell it. Because an unblemished firstborn animal is supposed to be brought by the Kohen as a korban, so therefore it's not even fully his. Yes, you know, it's in his house and he has to take care of it, but it doesn't fully belong to him, because since it's supposed to be brought as a korban, so in a certain sense it belongs to God. So the Rambam says that nowadays that there's no Beis HaMikdash and the Bechor cannot be offered as a korban. So it's going to be eaten eventually. You just have to wait for it to develop a mum. So in such a situation, the Kohen is allowed to sell it to whomever he wants, whether a Kohen or a regular Jew, because the Kohen, it fully belongs to the Kohen. There's just a rule that it cannot be eaten until it develops a blemish. So again, the if you would sell it to a Jew, so then he has to, you know, it's not necessarily a great purchase. He has to watch it until it develops a mum, and he can't really do anything with it until it develops a mum. But nevertheless, he's in theory he's allowed to sell it. Vaday shezeh shamar Rabbeinu Zal ha'il v'la'achila omeid, since it's going to be eaten. Kavanos lomar lichshiyipol b'amum. Obviously, that applies only when there's a blemish. Uvachor b'amum yishlekoin l'mocher b'chol zman bein b'fnei abayis v'shlo b'fnei abayis bein chay bein shochot l'chol adam v'afil l'goy. But once it already has a mum, then the non-Jew is even allowed to sell it to a. The kohen is allowed to sell it even to a non-Jew. Because there's no holiness at all now. It could just be eaten. So there's no problem to sell it to anyone. The reason that seemingly that the Sefer HaChinuch omitted mention of a non-Jew before and said that a bechor that is unblemished, you're only allowed to sell to a Kohen or a regular Jew, is because there's still rules regarding this bechor. That a Jew of any type is going to observe the rules, hopefully, regarding the bechor that can't be eaten until there's a woman. But if you sell an unblemished animal to a goy, so that the non-Jew is not going to take care. The non-Jew might just go ahead and shecht it while it's, slaughter it, while it's still unblemished, and that would be no good. So therefore, you're only allowed to sell it to a goy once it's been blemished. The chechulin gimurinhu, that once the firstborn has a blemish, it's completely considered regular food and has no holiness whatsoever. Kemosh kasuv, that the both the ritually pure and impure can eat it, just like chayis, just like these kosher wild animals that can be eaten. There are no restrictions on eating it. They're completely unconsecrated meat. But nevertheless, since it's connected to some degree of holiness, so you're not allowed to sell it in the marketplace, a bechor. You're not allowed to cut it up and sell steaks to the highest bidder. This steak weighs so much, and it's this is USDA prime, and this steak, other bechor is not going to be as much. So because that's considered to be somewhat insulting to an animal that had a certain degree of kedusha, so therefore you're only allowed to sell it privately, like you invite the buyer into your house, and you conduct the transaction accordingly. The yeser pratea in a more private, refined manner. The yeser pratea mevar b'maseches becharos. Benoeges mitzvah zo beretz Yisrael kemo mitzvahs kiddush bechor behema tohora shenoeg beretz Yisrael bilvad kedas ketzas mefarshim. So this is a very controversial line that the Sefer HaChinuch presents the mitzvah of bechor as being only in Eretz Yisrael, bein b'fnei habayis, b'shelo b'fnei habayis. So it doesn't matter where the Beis HaMikdash stands, the firstborn animal is still consecrated. Shenemar v'chalta l'fnei Hashem elokecha ma'asar diganecha tiroshcha v'yisarecha v'choros b'karcha v'tzonecha. So it says in the same pasuk that you eat the tithe, the Maaser Sheni, in Yerushalayim, as well as the Bechor. V'darshu zichron livracha, mimakom she'ata mevi Maaser, dahayinu Eretz Yisrael, then the place where you're from, whence you bring the tithes in Eretz Yisrael, ata mevi Bechor bakar vatzon. That's where you can bring the Bechor as a korban that you eat in Yerushalayim. So he says that that seems to indicate that the bechor that's from chutz laretz, where there's no obligation of tithes, you don't have to tithe your produce in outside the land of Israel. So too, there's no institution of a bechor, and a bechor that is born outside the land of Israel has no holiness whatsoever. So people go to town on this. This is based on one reading of the Rambam where he writes this, but the Ravid, everybody else says, Rambam, what on earth are you talking about? That doesn't mean that the institution of a Bechor is inapplicable in Chutz Laretz. It means that it says explicitly that Mokom Shata Mevi Maiser Ata Mevi Bechor Bechor Vatzon. It's talking about that if you want, you're not allowed to bring a Bechor that was born in Chutz Laretz as a Korban But the holiness of a bechor, to the extent that it cannot be eaten before it develops a mum, certainly applies in Chutz La'aretz also. There's no source at all that would even give the slightest hint, and many sources that indicate to the contrary, that a bechor in Chutz La'aretz does have holiness. So in fact, it could be, because again, there are two readings of the Rambam. One like the Chinuch presents it, and one where he says just the opposite, like everyone else, that a bechor is applicable in Chutz La'aretz. It just does not have the possibility to be brought as a korban. So the summary is the suggestion that it's very possible that the Rambam changed his mind. That at first he thought that it does, it's not applicable at all in Chutz La'aretz. Then he realized that, oh no, wait, no, really. And then he changed his mind. He wrote that it does. By Lemaisa, the majority shita by far is that a bechor is applicable in Chutz La'aretz. You just cannot bring it as a korban. What? Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. Everybody's obligated to do it. Shenemar, kol bechor asher yivaleid. Any bechor that's born. So Kohanim and Levim do not have to do Pidyon Aben, or the redemption of a firstborn donkey, as we learned previously and in Parshas Bo, that they have to observe the laws of Bechor. Of course, the Kohen could give the Bechor to himself. He doesn't have to give it to anyone. Here's a Bechor. I could go to the base of Mikdash. Now I can offer it as a korban. If it develops a womb, I can eat it right away. There's no giving, but the rules of the Kedusha Bechor do apply. So even if you say, hey, I'm redeeming the Bechor with something else, with a different animal, that doesn't work, but nevertheless, you have violated a negative commandment. So the famous machlokes between Abai and Rava, whether if you do something that's against the Torah, do your actions have effect or not? So, but even so, here both of them would agree that it does not have effect regarding the redemption of the Bechor. Aval eino loke levishav shalav or lav beli maisa, because even you could say it just orally, so that's not a maisa. So, not an action, so nevertheless, you don't receive the penalty lashes, but it's for sure aser to do. And in this situation, everybody agrees that it, in fact, does not even work. Mitzvah Shin Tzadi Dalet, 394. Mitzvah Avodas HaLevi BaMikdash. This is the mitzvah that a Levi is supposed to worship in the base of Mikdash in a certain manner. Leos HaLeviim Ovdim BaMikdash, Leos Shoarim Umishorim B'chol Yom HaLakorban. So, you have different types of Levium. There's a Levi who is a shoer, a gatekeeper, and you have a Levi who is a mishorer, who is a singer. So, yeah. That the Levi is the one who's supposed to do these things in the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe it's optional. You have a Levi and he says, hey, maybe I don't want to be a Levi. I'll just be a regular Jew and I won't worship in the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe it's optional. Maybe I'll give up my Maaser. I don't want the, you know, I have limited income that way. You know, I have 10% of the food of the rest of the Jewish people. But maybe if I go into business, I can make much more money than that. So I don't want to be limited to that amount. So I don't want to. Okay, I'll forgo the Beis HaMikdash and I'll make my own money. Tamulomar ve'ovad halevihu. No, he's required to take that. Al korcho kolomar shadavru chova ve'inyan mutal olav behechreach. That he is obligated to perform the worship in the ancillary worships in the base of Mikdash, whether he likes it or not. Yeah.
Is it obligatory for a kohen to do duchen nowadays? Quinn says, I don't feel like duchening. Is there a problem with that?
Walk out of
He's only obligated to go to the duchen once he's called. So again.
If he's not in the room, then, you know.
Correct. If he's not in the room, then he doesn't actively violate the requirement to duchen unless he hears the call and disregards the call. But if a kohen never goes to shul and always and stays home every single day and never hears the call, so. Yeah, you miss out on the opportunity to perform the mitzvah. But it's not actually a bitul mitzvah. It's not a unless he's actually called. V'nisbayer kemochen beperek sheni me'erchin shashir bepeh lo yomar oso lo'olam ela halevi. That has to be a levi who sings when the korban is offered. V'nichbel ha-mitzvah zo b'loshon acher b'torah sh'nemar v'sheireis b'shem Hashem Elokav, that the levi must serve in the name of the Lord his God. V'amru sham berchin ezehu sheru shu b'shem Hashem ha-v'yomer zo shira. So what does it mean to serve in the name of the Lord? So it means that you serve in a manner that involves saying the name of God in a pleasant manner, which is the song. Mishor she mitzvah lefi shekvod hamelech ve'amakom hu liyosham anoshim yidua mishevet yadua kivuim l'sherus. So why not just say, ask for volunteers? You know, come for the base of Mikdash for 1 week a year, even a regular Jew, and during that week you get the Meisar, you get supported, so you don't have to worry about going to work. So many people would jump at the opportunity, like jury duty. So some people hate jury duty, and some people love jury duty. They get off from work and they get to sit around there. You know, they have a per diem. So the people who like Levi duty will go to the base of Mikdash. People who don't like Levi duty won't go to the base of Mikdash. What's the big deal? No. The reason you have set people who attend to the Beis HaMikdash is because that's what brings the most honor to God. The Luikoni Zar Beineham LaAvoda. That when you have people, you know, switching up like that, or people who are not supposed to be there, that is less of an honor. Ke'ein Malchusa Da'ara Yemanu Lehem Anoshim Yiduim Nichvodim Lios Komlechas Ha'ichal Nasis Al Yodam. So when you have an earthly kingdom, it's the same thing. If you go to Buckingham Palace, so they have set employees. They have a butler and footmen and who knows what other servants that they have there that are dressed in a certain way and that are trained to attend to the royal needs. And if it would just be that whoever felt like it could walk into Buckingham Palace and serve dinner, they wouldn't know what to do. They wouldn't know the proper procedures, and it wouldn't be right that you have to have specially set people who the royal household chooses to conduct their affairs rather than just whoever feels like doing it. Ki lo roi lemelech sheyishane b'chol yom misharsim lefanav v'yuakol mishtamshim v'cheser sheyrus hamelech. And then it's not as batamt, because then it would detract from the singular quality of the servants. So if you go to England and then you meet someone and the person says, I'm retired now, but for 40 years I was in royal service. Ooh, wow, what did you do? That's so interesting. But if you allowed everybody to take turns and there weren't a set people, group of people, so then you walk into someone on the subway. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a royal service. Oh, I was in royal service. It wouldn't be so bechavadik that everybody in the country could consider themselves to be royal servants. V'zeh davar baruhu. This is a clear thing. Midinei ha-mitzvah, ma'ashar mezichron levracha, she-ben levi she-kibel olav kol mitzvahs levi achutz mi-davar echad in mekablin osu ad she-kabel eskulam. If a levi says, comes into the Beis HaMikdash, and you say, he's doing an intake interview, and he says, we have a few different jobs. We have guards, we have gatekeepers, we have singers, so you might be assigned to one or the other, and the Levi interviewee says, no, I'm only interested in being a doorkeeper, I'm not interested in singing. I don't believe that I should be doing that. So then he's rejected, he's not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, because the person who serves in the Beis HaMikdash, the Levi who serves in the Beis HaMikdash, has to accept the possibility of performing any of the duties that may be required of him as a Levi.
So what if, if he can't sing, he's not all in,
It doesn't, but that's not actively rejecting it, in the audition, so then maybe the person who's in charge of the Levium will say, hey, maybe you should be a gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to be that he comes and says, I'm only prepared to be a gatekeeper and not a singer. So that's no good. The Levi,
it's not over until the fat Levi sing.
So what would happen to this? I mean, he has a mitzvah to... Yeah.
Fine. They used to guard the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, we're talking about the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash and how they used to go walk around the Beis HaMikdash all night long. They would open and close the doors. The main thing that the Levim used to do, the most prestigious, I guess, was Leshorer al HaKorban, that when the Korbanos were offered, it was their job to sing. Veloha you omrim shira ela beolos tzibor shein chova val shalmi atzeres beis nisuch hayayin. So they didn't sing when at every Korban. They only used to do it when there were communal burnt offerings, like the Tamid. They used to sing. And they used to sing on the shlamim that were offered on Shavuos when they would pour the wine. Aval olos nedava shos in sibor leketz hamizbeach. There were certain types of offerings that were offered just so that the mizbeach shouldn't be idle. IDLE. So they used to have sometimes if there would be a stretch without a korban, so they used to have communal funds to purchase optional korbanos, because it wasn't honorable for the mizbeach to be idle. So they used to kates is like fruit. It's like the fruit, you know, unnecessary, like a dessert. This was the Beis HaMikdash's dessert. That is not a necessary korban, but they do it just for the honor, the pleasantness, as opposed to the requirement. And other libations, they would also not recite the songs when those were offered. Levi ha'onein mutar la'avod u'lashorer. So in contrast to a kohen, who is not allowed to worship when he is an onein, meaning that when one of the relatives for whom he has to sit shiva has died and is not yet buried on a deraisa level, that applies only on the day of death. Sometimes nowadays you have aninus, because we have in contemporary funeral practices, so we try to gather everyone for the funeral. Sometimes people are taking a train or a plane and they're coming to the funeral. And we have refrigeration so that bodies don't decompose. So therefore, we don't always bury as fast as would be halachically ideal. But even if you don't do that, so let's say you have a period of aninus for a couple days. So then on a daraisa level, the onen is only on the first day, the day of death. So this wouldn't even, if a levi, again, was waiting for a funeral for a few days, the only prohibition would be on the first day. Yeah.
Is it making a difference for an onen being a putter in mitzvahs? You know, being like first day you don't put on tefillin, you do
the first day of avelos. Right. I mean, aninus is the don't put on tefillin because of aninus, right?
Aninus, but the other is if it goes past the, is it any difference the first day and then say the second day, say the funeral's on the second day or something like that? Yeah. You said that there's a deraisa on the day of death.
Right.
Okay. And Rabbanan, presumably, if there's a second or maybe third day.
Right.
Is there any difference then regarding what the obligations or of the onen on the second day as opposed to the first?
That is a very fascinating and loaded question because
pretty simple way,
Because when Chazal were imagining aninus, I think they were thinking, "No, the person is so caught up in funeral preparations, so distraught, it's so new that there's an exemption from mitzvos again. Even if maybe again, if a person dies 2 minutes before shkia, so then on a deraisa level, the aninus will be only a few minutes." Mm-hmm. The Rabban, okay, he'll continue till next morning, the next afternoon, till they get the funeral together, or maybe at nighttime. Also, the Rabban, whatever. So it's very strange, like you say, the idea that if the funeral is only going to take place 3 days after the death, that a person should be an onen for 3 days and should go without davening and making brachas and all these things for the period of 3 days, especially when there are mitigating factors like it's the Hever Kedisha that takes care of the funeral arrangements and not the actual Onin himself. Certainly not for 3 days. Usually, if the Aninos is going to be a few days, then usually the Ovel takes care of the funeral arrangements right away, and then after a while, there's a period of just waiting.
Mm-hmm. That can be pretty stressful.
Yeah, I hear. No, that's the idea that maybe you're still so distraught. I'm saying, but if the funeral were under normal circumstances, the funeral would have been a couple days ago, so you would be in Avelos now, and you'd be Chayiv in Mitzvahs anyway. So, again, but it hasn't been, Belamaisa hasn't been buried. Yeah, so some people say that if the Chever Kedisha is taking care of everything, then maybe you shouldn't be technically an Onin.
Taking care of everything, because you've got to notify people.
Right, certainly while you're actively notifying people or actively writing a eulogy or something, certainly you'd be exempt. But according to some Shitas, if you weren't, after the funeral arrangements are taken care of, the body is given to the Chever Kedisha, that you don't have to worry about anything, and you're not actively engaged in funeral preparation, then essentially you would not be an Onein. Again, also with the additional factor that there's a major machlokes rishonim as to what's the nature of aninos. Does it mean that you're forbidden to perform mitzvos, or does it mean that you're exempt from performing mitzvos?
Right.
According to many rishonim, you're allowed to volunteer to perform mitzvos during aninos, even if you're exempt.
What would be the difference then? I mean.
So that's why some say that Ritakaf, all your funeral preparations are over and you're really not dealing with it at all. And there is a shita that you're allowed to fulfill mitzvos anyway. So there is a shita that you're no longer an onin at all at this time. And there's a shita that even if you are an onin, you're allowed to perform mitzvos. So then, according to some, then you would be allowed. Then you would perform mitzvos even before the levaya, as long as the arrangements were taken care of.
But
this does not seem to be the general common practice. The general common practice is that people behave as if they're in aninos until the levaya.
I don't think it's because they're trying to get away with anything. I think the practice just took.
No, I didn't say. I didn't mean to imply that.
I can really understand. You know, if you're too distraught, you're so distraught that you can't even say Shema, they say, listen, we get that. You're off the hook. We're not going to say you messed up because you failed to say Shema. We're letting you off.
No, but you're presenting it as even harsher terms than I think Chazal did. Oh, we're understanding and we're letting you off the hook that you're not in, you're too distraught to do it. No, it's the chatchila. You're not allowed. You don't do it.
You no longer say that a chassan is pater from Kishma is wedding night, right?
Correct.
Because nobody really is makpid about mitzvahs now.
Right, but
so
that's...
It's
because we don't have as much kavana. That's why we don't have as much kavana in Kishma. So that's why a chassan, even the first night, is obligated nowadays in Kishma.
Yeah.
But an onen, it's a different psychology. An onen, again, like Ms. Rambam said, is part of the reason is because they're so distraught and they're prepared, they're engaged in funeral preparations. That to a certain extent is like ha'otzik b'mitzvah pater min ha'mitzvah. That when you're engaged in funeral preparations, you don't have to do other mitzvos. But others say it's a question whether it's because of ha'otzik b'mitzvah pater min ha'mitzvah or because it's kavod ha'meis. That while you're preparing the levaya, so then you're not supposed to. They're not supposed to look as if you're relaxed and doing mitzvos.
Did I understand you correctly say a minute ago that nowadays we don't do that thing about the chassan being exempt from...
Correct, yeah.
He's supposed to?
Yeah, yeah. Because we don't have kavanah. The idea...
I missed that too.
All this reading I've done, I've always gotten the impression that the deal is that they're supposed to not do it, and if they insist on doing it, some people think it's kind of yuhara.
Yeah, so the Mishnah says that a chassan on the wedding night is exempt from reciting Shema.
The Rishonim
say that now that's because that he's so nervous about what's going to potentially happen later that night, so then he won't be able to have proper kavana during Krishma. But the Rishonim say nowadays we don't have proper kavana during Krishma anyway, so we don't have much to lose. So that's why.
So how come I never came across that? And
you've never been a chassan.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why I never came across it.
Never had a dessert.
Yeah.
but or play one on TV.
Right, but mm-hmm.
Every time I read about this, it's the context.
Okay, you can't learn halacha lemaisa just by reading Mishnayos. You have to. There's a longer discussion about these things. So yeah. Okay, so an Onen, a Levi who's an Onen, is allowed to do the worship. Ve'ein pochasin la'ola mishneimasar levim sha'omdim al ha'duchan lomar shira al ha'korban. So you have a minimum of 12 levim. Umosifin ad la'olam. You can have as many as you want. But many fit in the base of Mikdash, I guess. Ashira sha'omrim ha'levim hi ba'peh. Sheker shira ba'pehu. That means the main singing by a korban is orally. So there you have an option. So Galevi, who feels somewhat inclined towards being a meshorer and not a gatekeeper, so you have the option of you'll be playing the music, the instruments. You could have a horrible voice and still play a musical instrument very beautifully. Mehem Leviim, mehem Yisrael, miyuchasim shemasiyam osim lakahuna. But the people who are playing the instruments did not necessarily have to be Levium. It was only people who were singing who had to be Levium. So you also had the option of using Jews, regular Jews, with good yichus.
What does good yichus mean?
They had to have good yichus, documented yichus. You have to have documented yichus to the extent that they'd be allowed to have their daughters marry Kohanim. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, they used to have nowadays, you don't think twice about a Kohen marrying any Jewish woman. It doesn't matter. But in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when they had these people who had documented lineage, so the Kohanim would only marry Jews, girls from the from families that had this
What made it higher level?
So you always have to have a minimum of 9 violins. Umosifin ad la'olam, you can have as many more as you so desire.
It wasn't anything you said. I have to leave.
Okay.
Wait, I didn't realize it was as specific as a violin. I thought it was just one, or like a lyre.
In modern Hebrew, it means that. You're right. A stringed instrument, fine.
Yeah. They didn't even know.
Right, in modern Hebrew, it's called, I just said violin. In modern Hebrew, it's a violin. But it's not as specific in, you're right, in the old terminology.
So it's very interesting. 12, I can understand that there were 12 tribes.
It doesn't go by tribes, it goes by what sounds good.
But why is it 9 violins? Why is it 12? Well, it has to be 12 Levium singing. Why does it have to be 9 violins? Like
it sounds better.
It's for an orchestra, It's the minimum number of violins you can have in an orchestra. I mean,
but
it's probably more than 9.
Where did he get 9?
More than 9, I suspect. Mm-hmm. Said,
Why did he get 9? Like, where did it come from?
That's what it sounds like. No, he didn't get 9. It's from Chazal, but I think it's just because that's what it's. That's. Like you said, that's the minimum for an orchestra. That's what sounds good. It sounds thin. Yeah. It sounds.
Wouldn't be loud enough. Those days, I mean, you cannot even translate it into what's now because these instruments were very different from ours. So
right, stringed instruments.
So why would it apply for all eternity? That it would be 9
violins? Ah, because it's inside the base of Mikdash, so the acoustics of the base of Mikdash are going to be the same. It's a question here. Like, why is it? You take a look at an orchestra. Why do you have, so many more violins than you have, brass how loud they are, actually.
But it's set amount, and 12 Levium is also 12, but it's not 10.
They did studies, and they found that it doesn't sound as good if they had fewer than 12 Levium.
The union rules, yeah.
And even in the Beis HaMikdash, if you were, the rules stay the same. So, nowadays, you should just have a DJ making electronic music. Why do you need musical instruments at all? No, that's the way it is.
Yeah, right? Like if we rebuilt the third base HaMikdash, would that the same rule as apply?
We don't like changing things. Things stay the same, okay? That's how it works. Ein pochasin, but mosif elam. You can have as many violin, string instruments as you want. That tzaltzalim haya echad bilvad, and there was only the orchestra. There was only one set of cymbals,
like an orchestra today, right?
Yeah, when he goes that's not the main music. It punctuates the music. So you violin and on the symbols, yeah. ומן הדומה כי הטעם לפי שיקול המצלתיים גודל מאביס קצס או שקול, I'm sorry, שקול המצלתיים גודל מאביס קצס כאילו שם הרבה אלי נשמעים יוסר כלי הניגון ששם שקול בכל שכן שירה ספה. So to drown it out, simply. That it's a little not frightening, but surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, nine trombones or something like that. Yeah,
right, it would just be too much. V'chalilin she'o menagnim bahem haya abuv shelahem shel konem mipnei shekol orav. So it's the hollow part would be, the mouthpiece, I guess, would be of the reed. Because the reed produced the best type of sound. So again, the whole point over here is that it should sound as good as possible for the honor of the Beis HaMikdash. There were 12 days a year that the Yantif, etc., where the flute would play in front of the Mizbech. It sets aside Shabbos because it's part of the korban, the worship involved in the sacrifice. So korban docha hu es a Shabbos, and we know that the worship in the Beis HaMikdash sets aside Shabbos. Ve'ein ben Levi nichnas la'avodah shilamdu chamei shanim. So he has to prepare for his role 5 years. Well, it takes 5 years to learn how to close the gates, so... Moshe lamdu zichron, I take voice lessons for 5 years. Moshe lamdu zichron of lebracha mina kosuv mikan amru zichron of lebracha shetalmid shu lo ra'a semen yafe betamuda chamishonim shuve no ro'a. That if you try learning for 5 years, you go to kolel for 5 years and you don't have success in your learning, so maybe you should try a different profession. Veinu nichnas la'avu lo'olam ad shi'a godol. That he is training from what? He can start at age 13, the Levi. So he can start training at age 8 to start taking voice lessons like Miami Boys Choir, and then he goes at age 13. Shenemar ish ish alavoda, so each man. So you're not a man till age 13 when you are bar mitzvah. Ve'ein alevi nifs alavoda b'shanim velo memumen ela bekilkul hakol. Tonazkeni shemiskalkul kolam leisa zikma. So there is no maximum age for a Levi. He can go to the Beis HaMikdash for as long as he wants. If he has mumen, it doesn't matter. A Levi could be left-handed. It's also okay. Just the Kohen makes a problem. But the problem is when he cannot physically perform his duties, then he can no longer worship in the Beis HaMikdash. So it says that when you get to a certain age, sometimes your voice gets weaker and you can't sing as well, so then you cannot go to the Beis HaMikdash. V'zeh shenemar b'Torah mi'ben chamishim shana yeshu mitzvah avoda. But what do you mean? It says explicitly in the Chumash that there is a maximum age. That at 50, you stop worshiping the Levi. Eino ela b'zman she'u nosen ha'mishkan mokom l'mokom. Fine. So that's only when in the desert. That does not apply for all times in the Beis HaMikdash, the maximum age of 50. At 50, I think a lot of people could still sing very strongly. Just ask Chazon Shwaid, who was working till he was who knows how old. Yeah, 50 is not necessarily a cutoff for the practicalities of singing. But if you look at Ziknash and Eskalko Kolo, so when the Levi gets very old and he can't sing anymore, Einu Nifsal Lishmira Samikdash Lagaf Hazlaso. So he can still do the other things that the Levi are supposed to do. Bechol Zeh, Im Yeser Pratah Yizbar Yafim Makomos Bitomei Dumidos. It's explained in Masechas Tomei, Masechas Midos. Gan Perek Sheini Merchin, with work Tzas Menyan Zeh, a little bit in the second Perek of Merchin. Berachti Lach Beni Ma'at Bezeh, Ki Mehera Yibane Beis HaMikdash Vetitzarech Lo'ayi. I perhaps went a little bit at length to describe this mitzvah, which is, I don't know, again, he's somewhat inconsistent, but maybe he went a little more length than he usually does about Beis HaMikdash related mitzvahs, because he says, you're going to need to know this. Who's he talking to?
His son.
And the author of Sefer Chinuch was a
Levi.
So he says, mein kind, you need to learn these things, so when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, you are going to know what to do. And again, it's not a full treatise on exactly what the Levi has to do in the Beis HaMikdash, but he went into somewhat more detail in order to pique the son's curiosity, so he should be careful about learning all the rules about what he's going to need to do at the Beis HaMikdash. That's why, like, the Chofetz Chaim was very into learning the laws of the Beis HaMikdash, because he was a Kohen, and he had a special program for Kohanim that would learn the laws of the Beis HaMikdash. They would be ready to do it as soon as the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. Amen, Ken Yas Hashem. That's what we want to happen soon. This applies to the times of the Beis HaMikdash to Leviim only. If the Levi was set to sing at the on the Korban and he did not, again, it wasn't that all the Levim were there all the time, they took turns. Ela sheshosak, he just sat there quietly. Bitel aseizeh, he neglected to perform this commandment. There's no Malkus, obviously, because it's not a Maisa, but he still receives a very good, big punishment. He says, nah, I'm not interested in providing honor to the worship of God. And that's why God will prevent him from receiving honor. So if the Levim do their service very well, they'll receive a lot of bracha, because he's showing that he is concerned about the honor of God. And what can be deprived from the Levi, and what's the reward for the Levi, at least the earthly reward and punishment for the Levi for doing the work or not doing their work, will be discussed next time when we discuss the mitzvah of Maaser Rishon.